Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we are exploring a pretty wild question.
Yeah, very wild.
Right, like, how could a beloved Walt Disney movie trap a 5-year-old boy in a daily clinical depression for 23 years?
It sounds impossible when you first hear it.
It really does. But we have a fascinating source in front of us today to figure it out. It's a clinical case study from the blog of therapist Clint Matheny.
A really incredible read, by the way.
Oh, for sure. And our mission for you listening today is to basically uncover the hidden mechanics of your own childhood memories. We're going to look at exactly how trauma gets stored in the body and more importantly, how you can literally rewrite it.
Which is such an empowering concept for anyone, dealing with old baggage.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And the title of Matheny's post alone is just a complete showstopper. He titled it, "Walt Disney Productions Caused 23 Years of Depression and Nightmares to a 5-Year-Old."
I mean, that title immediately challenges our assumptions.
Yeah.
Because we tend to think of trauma as requiring some catastrophic, life-altering event. But this case study really reveals that for a developing brain, trauma isn't about the objective severity of the event at all.
Right, it's about something else.
Exactly. It is entirely about the internal experience of overwhelm. We all carry this invisible emotional baggage from our early years.
Yeah, we all have those ingrained reactions that we don't fully understand.
Right. And this story strips away the mystery of those reactions. It literally shows us the architecture of a nightmare.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because usually when we talk about memories, people use this tired analogy of a computer hard drive.
Yes, the old corrupted file metaphor.
Exactly. They say you experience something, the brain saves the file, and if it's trauma, it's a corrupted file that you can never delete. You just have to build firewalls around it and learn to manage the glitches, you know?
Which is pretty bleak, honestly.
It is. But reading through this case, that metaphor feels totally wrong. It's not a hard drive. It feels more like a river.
A river is actually a much more accurate way to look at neurobiology.
Really?
Yeah, because every time you experience an emotion or a thought pattern, it's like water flowing down a specific path in your brain.
Okay, I can picture that.
So if a 5-year-old experiences deep, inescapable terror, it's like a flash flood carving a really deep trench in the dirt.
Wow.
And over the years, even a tiny trickle of anxiety will naturally find its way into that deep trench. The water always follows the path of least resistance.
Right, because the canyon is already there.
Exactly. And the conventional wisdom in psychology for a long time was that you couldn't uncarve that canyon.
You're stuck with it.
Right. You could only build dams and try to redirect the water through daily coping mechanisms.
Which takes just an exhausting amount of energy. But what if you didn't just build the dam? What if you could trigger a mental earthquake that completely rearranged the landscape, filling in the canyon so the water just flowed differently from then on? To understand how that kind of cure is even possible, we first have to understand the sheer depth of the canyon in this particular patient.
Yes, we have to look at Bill.
Right. So let's look at the man Matheny refers to in his blog as Bill. The year is 1985. Bill is a 28-year-old man who walks into the therapy office with a baseline emotional state that is just agonizingly severe.
It really is.
He tells the therapist that he has been depressed since he was 5 years old.
And when Matheny asked him to pinpoint the last time he felt depressed, Bill said he was depressed sitting right there in the chair at that very moment.
Just a constant state.
He woke up every single morning feeling a crushing weight. I mean, this wasn't a seasonal mood swing or a reaction to a bad week at work.
No.
This was a continuous 23-year baseline of psychological pain. His entire adult personality was basically constructed on a foundation of despair.
I mean, that is over 8,000 mornings of waking up under a dark cloud, over 8,000 days. So Matheny decides to investigate the origin of this feeling.
He has to go to the source.
Right. And he doesn't just ask Bill to talk about his childhood. He has Bill locate the physical sensation of the depression in his body.
Which is a very specific somatic approach.
Yeah. Then, utilizing hypnosis and age regression techniques, Matheny asks him to trace that specific bodily feeling all the way back to the very first time it appeared.
And this is where the story gets incredibly specific and honestly a little surreal.
It really does.
The regression pulls Bill back 23 years to a specific nightmare he had when he was just 5 years old. The imagery is very vivid.
What does he see?
Well, in this dream, young Bill is being chased by these bizarre entities. He describes them to Matheny as sticks with legs.
Sticks with legs.
Yeah. He runs in terror and finds a hiding spot behind a big traditional U.S. mailbox.
Okay.
He catches his breath, feeling a momentary sense of safety, but then he looks up.
The walking sticks have found him, and they are looming right above him.
Just towering over this little kid.
Exactly. And the dream would always end at that exact precipice, that moment of being discovered and trapped.
Ugh, that's awful.
He would wake up from this terrifying image feeling completely, utterly hopeless.
And it wasn't just a one-time nightmare either. Mm. The clinical notes show that since that night at age 5, he had a similar dream essentially every single night.
Every single night.
Every night he was forced to run, forced to hide behind that mailbox, and forced to look up at these looming sticks. But, you know, the detail in the source that absolutely broke my heart is what little 5-year-old Bill tried to do about it.
It is so sad.
It really is. Bill stated that he actively tried to get back into the dream after waking up in a panic.
Right.
He would lay there in the dark, trying to force himself back to sleep to re-enter the nightmare so he could find a way to escape or, like, experience a better outcome.
He was desperately trying to rewrite the ending. But he always failed. I mean, he would either fall asleep and be trapped again, or he would lie awake, agonizing over his inability to change it.
He could win.
Failing to change the dream didn't just scare him. It solidified a profound, inescapable sense of hopelessness.
Wow.
That nightly ritual of defeat is the absolute core of his waking depression. He was rehearsing total powerlessness every single night of his childhood.
So what does this all mean? Because I have to push back here because this is where I get tripped up reading this.
Okay, go for it.
We all have bad dreams as kids, you know. I used to have a recurring nightmare about falling off a massive suspension bridge.
Sure.
It was terrifying in the moment, sure. But I woke up, had a bowl of cereal, realized my bedroom floor was solid, and went to kindergarten.
Right. You moved on.
Yeah. So I'm struggling to buy this a little bit. Why does failing to change a weird dream about walking sticks functionally ruin a grown man's life for over 2 decades? It just seems massively disproportionate.
Well, you woke up and realized the bridge wasn't real because your brain was able to apply context to the fear.
Okay.
But for Bill, the emotional reality of the bridge, so to speak, never went away. This highlights a really crucial mechanism in how children process threats.
Which is what?
Well, a 5-year-old's prefrontal cortex, the logical reasoning part of the brain, is still highly underdeveloped.
Right.
They don't neatly separate the objective reality of the waking world from the intense emotional reality of a dream. So when Bill is hiding behind that mailbox and the looming threat arrives, his nervous system is experiencing genuine existential terror.
So to him, it is completely real.
He genuinely believes his survival is at stake.
Once he wakes up in his bed, shouldn't the fear dissipate? Like, he's safe in his room.
The crucial element isn't the initial fear. It's the lack of resolution.
The trying to go back to sleep part.
Exactly. When he wakes up and instinctively tries to go back to sleep to win the dream, his nervous system is attempting to resolve an open trauma loop.
Okay, I see.
It is a biological drive to restore his agency and prove to himself that he can survive. The repeated failure to do so is the true trauma.
Not the sticks.
Right. It creates a permanent emotional imprint. The walking sticks cease to be the primary issue. The issue becomes the internalized belief that no matter what he does, no matter how hard he tries, he cannot win.
Man.
He cannot save himself from impending doom.
Wow. So the canyon is carved by that feeling of inescapable powerlessness.
Yes.
And it generalizes. It bleeds entirely out of the dream state and becomes the lens through which he views his entire waking reality.
That is the clinical definition of his depression. It is a learned helplessness that has calcified into a personality trait.
If logic can't break a cycle of powerlessness, then Matheny couldn't just talk to Bill about the dream, right?
No, talk therapy wouldn't touch this.
You can't just tell a 28-year-old man that sticks don't have legs. He knows that.
Of course he does.
So Matheny had to figure out a way to let Bill actually win a fight that happened 23 years ago. Which brings us to the actual intervention Matheny performed in that 1985 session.
The intervention utilized a psychological procedure originally developed by Richard Bandler.
And what was that called?
Bandler called it Change Personal History, but Matheny later refined this into a protocol he very aptly named Back to the Future.
I love that name because it perfectly describes the mechanics of the exercise.
It really does.
Matheny tells 28-year-old Bill to close his eyes and pretend he could time travel. But not as a passive observer.
Right. He has to participate.
He is instructed to actively step into the memory of that very first nightmare, arriving just before the walking sticks begin to chase his 5-year-old self.
And Matheny provides Bill with a highly intentional script for this.
What does he tell him to say?
He instructs the adult Bill to walk up to the younger Bill and introduce himself. He tells him to look the child in the eye and say, "I am from your future and I have survived all of your nightmares."
Oh man, just pause on that line for a second. "I am from your future and I have survived all of your nightmares."
It gives you chills.
If you are a terrified kid hiding alone in the dark, is there anything in the universe you'd rather hear?
Probably not.
It's an incredibly powerful concept. Matheny then tells the 28-year-old Bill to physically hold the 5-year-old's hand, establishing a connection before the monsters even appear on the horizon.
By inserting the adult self, Matheny is introducing a massive contradictory variable into a rigidly closed system.
The kid isn't alone anymore.
Exactly. The child now has an advocate who possesses 23 years of strength, knowledge, and survival. Matheny then tells Bill to start the movie in his mind's eye and let the dream play out.
And the breakthrough happens with staggering speed.
So fast.
Within a minute of starting this mental movie, 28-year-old Bill, this man who walked into the office chronically depressed, starts laughing out loud right there in the chair.
Which had to be wild to witness.
Right. Matheny asks him what happened. Bill explains that in his mind, he and his younger self hid behind the mailbox, just like the dream always went. But this time, when the towering sticks arrived, they didn't cower.
No.
Bill and his younger self jumped up together and screamed, "Boo!"
And the sticks got scared, turned around, and ran away.
They ran away. After 23 years of tyranny, the monsters are defeated by a loud boo.
It sounds so simple.
It does. Matheny then ends the session with an integration visualization. He asks the 5-year-old and the 28-year-old if they're interested in growing up to the present moment together. They agree, and the 5-year-old essentially absorbs into the 28-year-old Bill. And that was it. The source notes that this was the only time Matheny ever saw Bill in a clinical setting.
A single session resolution of a 23-year clinical issue.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting, but also, honestly, incredibly hard to believe for someone hearing this for the first time.
I know what you're thinking.
Are we really saying that a grown man just sat in a chair, imagined himself yelling boo at some imaginary pieces of wood, and that successfully cured a lifetime of daily crippling depression?
Yeah.
Because it sounds too simple. It sounds like a party trick, not medicine. I mean, I need the science on this.
It absolutely sounds like a magic trick on the surface. But beneath that simple visualization is a profound neurobiological mechanism known as memory reconsolidation.
Reconsolidation. Okay, how does that work?
Well, for decades, neuroscience believed that memories were like photographs.
Right, like the hard drive analogy.
Exactly. Once you took the picture and developed the film, the image was permanent. But we now know that memories are more like a theater production.
A theater production.
Yeah. Every time you recall a memory, your brain has to pull the actors onto the stage and recreate the scene. And while the scene is playing out, the memory actually becomes malleable.
Oh, wow.
The synaptic connections temporarily unlock.
So just by remembering the nightmare, Bill is unlocking the file.
Yes. But merely unlocking it isn't enough to change it.
Right.
If you just remember a trauma, you often just re-traumatize yourself. The canyon gets deeper.
You reinforce it.
Exactly. To actually rewire the memory, you need what neuroscientists call a prediction error or a mismatch.
A mismatch.
Yes. The brain expects the memory to result in the feeling of absolute powerlessness. But Matheny introduces a contradictory emotional truth.
Which is the safety.
Right. The feeling of safety and capability brought by the adult Bill.
The 28-year-old holding the kid's hand.
Precisely. The brain is simultaneously experiencing the old trigger, the walking sticks, and a completely new contradictory emotion safety.
Wow.
This mismatch forces the brain to update the file. The old neural pathway literally unbinds, and new proteins are synthesized to lock in the updated emotional response.
So the word boo doesn't even matter.
The word boo is entirely irrelevant. The actual cure was the introduction of an empowered adult advocate into a space where a child previously felt entirely defenseless.
That makes so much sense.
It rewrote the emotional root of the memory from hopeless to victorious. The mental earthquake happened, the canyon filled in, and the water of his daily consciousness could finally flow freely.
That dual awareness is the magic key.
Hmm.
He is feeling the old fear, but bringing a new strength to it simultaneously.
Yes.
And I love that the logic of the intervention matches the exact logic of a 5-year-old's brain.
It really does.
Because to a kid, how do you defeat a monster? You get a grown-up to help you scare it away.
Yep.
It doesn't rely on an adult sitting there over-intellectualizing the nature of the sticks. It relies on deep emotional resonance.
It speaks the nervous system's native language.
Which is brilliant.
Yeah.
But of course, an immediate sense of relief in a therapist's office is one thing. The true test of any psychological intervention, especially one that sounds this wild, is whether it actually holds up in the real world, outside the safety of that room.
That's the real test.
Let's see what happened to the riverbed after the earthquake.
Yeah.
This brings us to the follow-up, and a truly incredible twist.
The source material details a remarkable follow-up call. About 3 years after that single, solitary session in 1985, Bill reaches out to Matheny.
3 whole years later.
Mm.
So we know for a fact this isn't just a temporary placebo effect.
Not at all.
Bill calls to say that the 1985 session completely turned his life around. He is no longer waking up depressed. He has gotten married, and he has built a highly successful career in the airline business.
Amazing.
He is, for all intents and purposes, entirely cured.
And the detail that really anchors this outcome involves Bill's mother.
Oh, right.
During the phone call, Bill mentions that his mother had recently visited him over the holidays. She hadn't been around to see the day-to-day incremental progress, so the contrast was incredibly striking for her.
It must have been night and day.
She immediately saw this dramatic, fundamental change in her son's baseline personality. She could tell he was a different, lighter person, and she demanded to know what on earth he had done to achieve this.
So Bill sits down in his living room and shares the details of the therapy session with her. He explains the hypnosis. He tells her about going back in his mind to age 5, hiding behind the big U.S. mailbox, and teaming up with his younger self to yell boo at the walking sticks.
Mm-hmm.
And as he recounts this bizarre dream logic to his mother, she bursts into tears.
Because the mother suddenly holds the final key to a 23-year-old mystery.
Yes. Tearfully, his mother recounts a memory of her own from when Bill was 5.
What did she remember?
She remembers taking him to the movie theater for a fun afternoon. And not just to see any movie. She took him to see Walt Disney's Fantasia.
Wow. And when we contextualize Fantasia, it is widely considered an absolute animation masterpiece.
Oh, for sure.
It's renowned for pairing sweeping classical music with highly imaginative visuals. But for a 5-year-old with an unformed prefrontal cortex,
it can be pure, unadulterated nightmare fuel.
Complete.
Think about the famous Sorcerer's Apprentice scene. Mickey Mouse brings a broom to life to carry buckets of water, but then he loses control. The mother remembers that during the film, young Bill grew so incredibly distressed by the imagery that they actually had to leave the theater.
Wow.
And in the weeks immediately following that movie trip, the nightly nightmares began.
The walking sticks looming over the mailbox weren't random subconscious manifestations of anxiety.
No.
The source text reveals exactly what they were. The terrifying walking sticks were the marching brooms from the movie.
The brooms from Fantasia.
Unbelievable.
Think about it like a funhouse mirror. To an adult watching that movie, it's just a charming cartoon.
Yeah.
But feed that sensory experience through the funhouse mirror of a 5-year-old's developing brain.
It's overwhelming.
The music by Paul Dukas is relentless and rising in panic. The brooms have no faces, no eyes, no emotion. They just march relentlessly forward.
Very mechanical.
And when Mickey chops them into pieces with an axe, the splinters magically form into an entire army of brooms, multiplying and coming at him in a flood.
Right.
To a child, that is the ultimate visual representation of an unstoppable, towering monster that you cannot control.
It is a perfect analogy for how the brain distorts inputs.
Yeah.
The child's perception of the threat is their absolute reality. The objective truth of the movie screen, that it is just ink and paint, is entirely irrelevant to the nervous system.
It doesn't care.
The nervous system only registers the overwhelming sensation of being small, trapped, and out of control.
And this brings us to Matheny's central thesis from the blog, which I think is a vital takeaway for anyone listening to this deep dive. Matheny writes, "No matter how perfect the parent of a child, the child can still be traumatized by an event."
It completely reframes how we must view childhood trauma.
It really does.
Even in the most nurturing, supportive, and loving environments, unexpected incidents can leave massive emotional scars. We often reserve the word trauma for severe abuse or catastrophic accidents.
Right, the big stuff.
But the brain doesn't categorize trauma by adult societal standards. It categorizes trauma purely by the internal experience of overwhelm and powerlessness.
Right. Bill's mother didn't do a single thing wrong. She took her kid to see a universally beloved Disney classic. She was being a great mom.
Yep.
And yet, That innocent afternoon at the movies planted a seed that grew into a 23-year depressive nightmare. It really takes the heavy burden of blame off the parents, but more importantly, it takes the blame off the individual suffering from the depression.
For you listening, this is a profound invitation to reflect on your own emotional landscape.
Definitely.
What seemingly innocent events from your own past might have left disproportionate emotional imprints on your nervous system?
Good question.
Maybe your walking stick wasn't a cartoon broom. Maybe it was a passing sarcastic comment from a second grade teacher that made you feel deeply stupid.
Oh, wow.
Maybe it was a moment of feeling totally lost in a crowded grocery store for 30 seconds. If we understand that our adult emotional responses, our sudden anxieties, our imposter syndrome, or inexplicable anger are often anchored to a young child's misinterpretation of an event, it allows for incredible self-compassion.
It really does. You stop agonizing over the question, what is fundamentally wrong with me? And you start asking, what outdated emotional loop is currently running in the background?
You recognize that you are no longer the frightened child who carved that canyon.
Yeah.
You possess the capacity, exactly like Bill did, to be the empowered adult who steps back into the memory and provides the safety that was missing. You have the tools to trigger that mental earthquake.
So, to summarize this incredible journey, we start with a 5-year-old boy terrified by relentless multiplying cartoon brooms in a Disney movie.
Right.
That sensory terror morphs into walking sticks in a nightly dream, creating a loop of inescapable powerlessness. That unclosed loop carves a deep canyon in his mind, manifesting as a 23-year waking clinical depression.
Mm-hmm.
But then, at 28 years old, he engages in a mental time travel exercise. He holds his own hand, screams boo, utilizes the biological miracle of memory reconsolidation to rewrite the emotional root of the memory, and completely transformed the trajectory of his life, ending up happily married with a thriving career.
Mm. It beautifully illustrates a core truth about human psychology.
Which is?
Our personalities and our chronic emotional states are very often just survival strategies reacting to old, outdated scripts.
Wow.
We build entire adult lives around protecting ourselves from ghosts that only exist in our neural pathways. But memory reconsolidation proves that the brain's neuroplasticity works in our favor.
It's not permanent.
The architecture of our past is not written in stone. It is a living, breathing landscape that we have the power to reshape.
We really do have the power to reach into the river and redirect the water. Which leaves us with one final thought for you to mull over as you go about your day.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about Bill, we've talked about Fantasia, and we've explored the mechanics of the human brain. But think about your own memories. If a 28-year-old man could reach back through the decades, step into a nightmare, and rescue his 5-year-old self from a lifetime of despair. Wait, what past version of you is currently hiding behind a mailbox, just waiting for the present day to show up, hold their hand, and change the story?